This is Teddy Teapot with Teddy Mellencamp.
Hey guys, it's Teddy Mellencamp here, and I have Sam Rubin joining me today for the second jam-packed episode of Teddy Podcast.
It's genuinely jam-packed.
Crazy. I mean, jam-packed. I mean, we had some learning curves. Our original font on the podcast, everybody thought it was Teddy Pee-Poo.
Ooh.
Instead of Teddy Peapod.
Teapot.
Why did they think that?
Because we're spilling the tea and everyone thought it was Teddy Teepoo.
Because apparently P-O-D all in caps looks like poo. But we learned that the hard way.
Right.
But, you know, we learn from our mistakes over here.
Teddy Teepoo is not a terrible name.
You know what? I've spent considerable time now in the studio with Teddy, and I can reveal that she has not evacuated herself in any fashion.
I'm going to try to keep that as a general
rule. Okay, good. That would be good.
Okay, perfect. Today, we're going to dig into a lot of things that you want to know. I mean, I have become obsessed with learning about Catherine Oxenberg and the NXIVM sex cult, and she's going to be joining us today, along with a lot of other things. I watch last night's Keeping Up with Kardashians, and I'm with Scott here. He was pissed about the spanking comment that Kourtney made. Whew, we got to dig into that. Wow. So in lighter news, I have some red carpet questions for you.
I did this Terrence Howard interview on the Emmy red carpet.
I mean, I need so much information on this because, I mean, I Googled some things like, you know, the flower of life. And
right.
Images came up that he wasn't talking about.
Well, you know, it was funny because we actually had this perfectly lucid cut. We do this red carpet show completely live, which is exactly how I prefer it. And I like the idea that you never know what's going to come up. But we were in a commercial break and he came up and we had this, just as you and I are talking right now, this very lucid conversation, as parents do, about health insurance.
Okay.
And the SAG after the Screen Actors Guild, American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, health insurance. And, you know, one gripe, I have four kids, is, you know, you can go to rehab 1,000 times, but you can't get braces for your kids. So, like, it's like I trade the rehab thing. And he was saying, and this was so interesting and maybe should have been a clue, he was talking about everything his character had been through. Lucius had been through an empire.
Okay.
Yeah, almost as if he goes.
As if it was him. So right. Was he in character at the moment?
I don't know. But he was like, well, you know, as you know, I've lost a son. I've, you know, had another jump off a bridge. I had a baby with a baby mama. And I mean,
maybe that could be real life, too. We don't know.
And I need counseling. I need somebody on the set. And I'm like, oh, can't you get that? And he goes, no, you know, they don't cover that. And then I said, gee, does the, you know, the network is Fox, the production company, Imagine, do they cover it? And he's like, no, they don't. And he was kind of mad about that. And then, you know, that typical in your ear, 3, 2, 1, oh, we're back.
And oh, so he was already amped up. He was revved up.
Yeah, a little revved up. And so the question surrounding him had been, and, you know, he's a very fine actor. You might remember Hustle and Flow and a couple other things. The question surrounding him was, he had announced that after he finishes these 15 episodes of Empire, he's done, that he's not going to act anymore. And so I was like, hey, we're back and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Terrence Howard is here. Hey, Terrence, when you made reference to that, are you not coming back for a while or forever? Which I thought was a legit thing to say. And then he sort of, well, and then just goes.
Well, then he goes into like all of this math and algebra and all, and I'm like, listen, it's too early for this right now. As I just want to see everybody's outfits, maybe a couple snarky comments, but this is a lot for me. And then what was the thing about gravity? And what was he going to YouTube?
Well, he was he was talking about all. And then I'll polish my own halo. So he's just going off. And in lieu of saying, you know, you're insane, what are you talking about? I said, which I thought was the right thing to say, I said, gee, that's a big remark.
I heard that, which I love. And then he almost fueled his ego. Like, he was like, oh yeah, it is. You want to hear what else I got to say? I mean, I've got YouTube things. Like, I want to prove gravity isn't a force. I'm like, tell my pregnant belly that.
Right.
Because you know what? It feels like one.
Yeah. So anyway, he kind of went on, and then, you know, he was getting a star, which has since taken place, on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And he said on Tuesday, when he gets that star, he was going to somehow eliminate all gravity from Saturn or prove that Saturn didn't require gravity or something. And he was going to release a big tape on YouTube. And all of that, of course, turned out not to be true.
Not happening.
Not happening. And then I'm not familiar with, you'll know the word I'm about to say, but I'm not familiar with the everything surrounding it. You might be. A lot of people texted and tweeted in, oh, it's ayahuasca talking.
Oh, he's doing, okay, so I have heard of this. It's something where you take a drug and it's supposed to rid you of all of these negative energies, but you can also kind of like trip out on it.
Right, that's what I understand.
Which, like, for me, if that's even like a percent chance is going to happen, it's going to rid me of anything. But there's also the tripping out factor. I'm good. I'll keep my negative energy right. or my issues.
You trip out, hallucinate, and poop your pants.
No,
no, I understand that. By the way, the beautiful Amy Sugarman, chiming in.
Have you tried?
I've never even had a sip of alcohol.
But I do think I like the polite phrase, it causes you to fully evacuate.
And you know what? I don't know that I need to fully evacuate.
Right.
I feel like I'm fine with where I am. Some issues.
Yes.
You know, sometimes it comes out in anger, tears,
right.
happiness,
right,
whatever.
Right.
But you think he maybe tried this right before the red carpet?
I don't think he did that, but I think people were saying the language is such that... You know, gee, this
oh,
is
when
this
you was, when you're doing that. This is what happens.
This is the way they talk. I don't know.
I mean, that's intense.
Yeah.
And then when he walked away from you, were you trying to like eavesdrop on his conversation with everybody else?
You know what? Funnily enough, fashion wise, he looked fantastic.
He looked amazing.
He had a great vest, and the vest tied in the back like he was a pirate or something. It was a really good outfit.
Do we think that anybody like messaged him like, hey, I'm waiting for the info Tuesday. Like, where is it? Like, I still want to know where I was going to watch it, but it wasn't there.
Yeah, it wasn't there. No, and I thought, you know, when you get these stars on the Walk of Fame, there's kind of a formal ceremony. I thought surely somebody would kind of shout out.
Maybe
hey,
like Saturn's
yeah,
there.
What about Saturn? Exactly. So
yeah, well, that was one of those things where I was like, you handled it like a champ. I probably would have just sat there with like a deadpan expression and just my mouth agape. But yeah, pretty crazy. Is there any other little tidbits we really need to know about that? About what your thoughts on it? Or are we just going with?
I feel that that's one of those rare instances where the tape is sort of self-explanatory. If you just see it. But what was interesting to me is, frankly, more than any of the Emmy winners, more than anything else, that seemed to generate more headlines than anything. Because I think that people
love crazy.
Well, I was going to say people love crazy, or people love what they perceive as real. And so that was a real, obviously, an unscripted moment. You couldn't write that stuff.
No.
You couldn't plan that stuff.
You couldn't remember it. Right. I'm trying to read it and I can't.
Right. So I think people kind of appreciated it, but it really traveled. I mean, just everywhere.
Okay. So let's take a little break now before we bring on Catherine Oxenberg, which is going to be so good. Sam.
Yes.
Have you noticed anything about my skin?
Okay. Here's the thing about you. You're really good looking. Beautiful hair, a lovely smile, but you really do have beautiful skin.
Oh, well, thank you. Hopefully it's glowing.
Yes.
Because Beauty Chews has changed the game when it comes to skincare. They created a gummy that contains a very unique ingredient that is scientifically proven to keep your skin looking youthful and healthy. Do you know how many toxins are in our daily life?
Tons.
Pollution, caffeine, the sun, lack of sleep, everyday stress.
I drive with the top down.
Whoa, you're really living on the edge. This is exactly why you need Beauty Chews
okay.
gummies as a part of your daily beauty routine. The unique ingredient that Beauty Chews uses is a very special red algae antioxidant and is nicknamed the Fountain of Youth.
I'm in.
So am I. It's 6,000 times stronger than vitamin C. It not only slows down aging in our skin by increasing hydration and protecting our collagen, it can actually reverse the damage that's already been done, which is why it's never too late to start. Today could be your day.
All right, very good. Are they yummy? I love gummies
are
in general.
Delicious,
okay.
Especially, it tastes like fruit punch, and it only has 1 gram of sugar.
Wow. I love fruit. I'm deeply into Hawaiian punch in bottles.
Well, then you're going to love these. And they're available on Amazon or through their website. And get $10 off your first 1 month supply of Beauty Chews. Go to yourbeautychews.com and enter Teddy at checkout. That's yourbeautychoose.com and enter TEDDI at checkout. Okay, so now we're here with Catherine Oxenberg, who has been speaking out about her daughter's slave role in NXIVM and its secret society. I mean, I have been blown away about all of this for years, but more importantly, like now digging into your story, your daughter's story. The E! True Hollywood story airs on Sunday, October 6th at 10 p.m. And I mean, my heart was just breaking reading the story, watching the Lifetime movie, like everything. I have so many questions, but I was wondering if you could give a little background just for our listeners, and then we'll kind of dive in to the questions.
Okay. So in 2011, I was introduced to what I was told was a leadership program, a personal development, business kind of training. My eldest daughter, India, at that point was 19 turning 20. And I went to an introduction. It was hosted by a gentleman called Mark Vicente. Actually, Sarah Edmondson was there as well, who's an actress. But he I knew because he had made a movie called What the Bleep. So he had, and this is how these groups, these that I call cults, operate. They very often have legitimate consumer-facing companies. It doesn't look like a cult. Nobody signs up to join a cult. You think it's a legitimate program. And they're very often offering legitimate tools and valuable resources, or else they would never be able to recruit people. So we signed up. India loved the intro. She asked me to do it with her. So we signed up and we did this 5-day class. I was really not very impressed.
This was in Los Angeles.
This was in LA in kind of a pop-up home. And they had about, 30 coaches all wearing different colored sashes. And there were about 22 students. And amongst the students were a couple of celebrities. And
Do you mind telling us who?
Oh, God, do I?
Well, I mean, that we kind of go deep here.
Well, is that so deep?
Well.
Okay, Rosario somebody or other.
Okay.
And then Callum Blue, who actually is, he appears in this piece, who's one of my dearest, oldest friends. And I didn't know that he had been signed up by an actress in Vancouver. And I think that's, a lot of people in the entertainment business recommending, hence Alison Mack, who was in Vancouver. Callum was on Smallville. So it was sort of Kristen Kreuk. It was all these people that were signing each other up. I started to see in those first 5 days weird things. But I've done a lot of weird stuff. It doesn't necessarily mean this is dangerous. Right. And so, you suspend. And some of the weird stuff, okay, the sashes are weird because it's not a dojo. Taking your shoes off, okay, I ask people sometimes to take their shoes off. I'm going to wave. Signing an NDA because they're saying this material is proprietary. Okay, that's weird. And I had a problem with that because I'm like, I can't talk to my husband who's not in the room about things that I'm learning. That's bizarre. And then this mission statement that you're supposed to read out loud. And then the bowing and the thanking Vanguard, who is Keith Raniere. They have a title for him. And then Nancy Salzman, prefect, who's his number two. They have titles for people. And there's this kind of...
like hierarchy.
There's a hierarchy. So these things that seemed like a little... I refuse to say, to say the mission statement every day where you pledge to recruit people. I'm like, I paid a lot of money for this class. I'm under no obligation to recruit. Every time I verbalized that I had an issue, they would say, well, you have a defiance issue, and they would throw it back. Ugh. And that is the beginning of how they start to make people suggestible and submissible, is that if you have an issue, it's your problem. It's never theirs. Now, I went on, and this is where I got hooked. They do two kind of different things, for lack of a better word. They do these modules, which are classes, which are sort of these philosophical questions that they put to you. And for the most part, I would fall asleep during these exchanges. And then they do these, what are called EMs or explorations of meanings.
Were you supposed to fall asleep?
No. And they called me disintegrated because I would fall asleep. And then you do these more experiential kind of processes. Yeah, whatever, that are the question sets to let go of limitations, phobias, whatever. And the way they pose the questions, you have these deep emotional catharsises. Now, a lot of these large group awareness trainings do this, be it Landmark, be it whatever.
This is supposed to be an executive success program.
Exactly. Thank you. It was not called NXIVM at that point. It was called executive success program. We talked very little about business. But let me tell you what is so key. You're having a deep emotional experience. You automatically link these rather banal philosophical concepts and you give them greater meaning. And that is the beginning, the first steps of indoctrination. Because what they're doing is they're building a philosophy that is supposed to be the philosophy of Keith Raniere that they build into a doctrine that is supposed to be better than anything else. And with emotional linkage, you're engaging parts of the brain that actually make you believe that these are fundamentally more substantive beliefs. You never know that.
And they're essentially telling you to always ignore your gut feeling, correct?
Yes. So part of the exploration of meaning is you have an issue with something and you want to remove your reactivity because you think that's a limitation. And what it is you're unhooking your gut. It's the beginning of them dismantling your personality.
So you can never leave. So you think, so once they've dismantled it, you don't want to leave.
Well, worse than that is first they build you up and then they start to tell you all the problems that you have and only they can fix you.
So then your self-worth goes down.
And you're very lucid about all of this now.
Yeah.
As you were initially and your daughter going through this, it doesn't seem to me that you were able to see as clearly as you're able to see now.
Okay. I was incredibly naive about cults. I had done a lot of self-help. A lot of this reminded me of other self-help programs that I'd done. I'd cried on a lot of shoulders doing various, you know, processes. It wasn't that outlandish.
May I ask something that's kind of personal? Was there something that happened that you and your daughter's life that you guys were really searching for inside of this? Or was it really business? Like you wanted your businesses to grow? Or do you think there was something you guys were looking for?
I considered myself a seeker always.
Okay.
But I had reached a place where I was a little bit cynical about self-help, feeling like that I'd probably, there was no stone unturned. My daughter, on the other hand, was about to launch a business. And so really for her, I thought it was an opportunity for her to... What they said is that it was going to help your critical thinking, your leadership skills, and I thought it would help her as she forged her way into the business world. So it really was as simple as that. And we learned very little about legitimate business. We learned a lot about how to detect con artists, which I find very ironic, considering the whole thing was a con.
Right.
Yeah.
And how quickly into this do you think that you guys figured out you're no longer in like a Tony Robbins-esque motivational retreat and you're actually going to be in like a sex cult branding women and having women's masters? Like how?
Okay.
What's the actual turnaround here?
Yes. This is the grooming process of a predatory group or a sexual predator. So we started taking classes in 2011. By 2013, I was done.
Oh, but you were there for 2 years.
But I taking classes sporadically, and there's two different ways. You could be a dilettante student, which I was and was frowned upon, and people like Sarah tried to recruit me relentlessly to become a coach, and they succeeded with India, who became a coach. The minute you sign up to become a coach, you're giving them permission to give you feedback, and feedback is constant criticism, and that's where they begin to break you down brutally.
And also, I read something that like thousands and thousands of dollars are given to this organization. Where is the money going to? Because sometimes other cults or other religions or whatever you want to say that they are, it's going back to give back to people or blah, blah, blah. But where are they claiming this money is going? And didn't your daughter end up having to go through tons and tons and tons of money?
Yeah, they say that's the whole point, is to recruit people and then to really suck them dry financially. Where the money goes, nobody knows, because they consider themselves a humanitarian enterprise. And then you have the Bronfmans, Sarah and Claire Bronfman, who have been members since 2003 on the executive boards, basically giving them access to hundreds of millions of dollars.
And so this is just their way of being almost like, this is like a God complex.
Well, it's Keith's God complex for sure.
And then they worship him.
They worship him. And that's all embedded in the curriculum. So nobody meets him before you've done the level one, which is 15 days.
And how do you think that your daughter got sucked in further and you were able to escape. Like, how did that happen? And then I have to ask as a mom, like, how didn't you rip her out right away? Like, what ends up happening?
Okay, so that there's a, I could actually spend an hour with you just breaking down those questions, but to simplify, I didn't see anything harmful happening in the beginning, even though when she said, Mom, I'm signing up to be a coach, I was like, my heart sank. Then it's steps by steps. I have five kids. I mean, I've helped mother five kids. It's not until you really have to let them make mistakes. You can't step in and stop them from learning their lessons. You have to give them the dignity of their own process. But what happened when I was told that she was in danger, which was in April of 2017, and I was told about DOS, which was the slave master group, and I was told about the severe diet restriction, and I had seen symptoms, but I had couldn't put, if you don't know what to look for, it's like if your kid is an addict, you don't know,
you've
never dealt with it.
How often were you seeing her?
Not often, because they wouldn't let her leave, unbeknownst to me.
So she had gone to another state.
She had moved to Albany. In around, I'm trying to remember if it was 2016, but she was gone. So I barely saw her.
It's fascinating to hear you guys talk, because I did a ton of research about this and listened to this podcast called Escaping Nexium. What's difficult about talking to Catherine is there is so much information and so much story to tell that you're getting little pieces like DOS. Yeah. And one thing I wanted to tell you guys quickly, since you're touching on the money, is the criminal charges that have been placed are on the racketeering charges, which basically means this is all a racket. It's just BS, illegal money.
And how much money did they, like, how much money was seized? Do we know that?
Well, I know how much was seized for Nancy Salzman, who was number two prefect, around $500,000. But we're talking about, this is a criminal enterprise. And ironically, I was the first person to kind of, with a team of lawyers, figure out that there was racketeering going on, that there was sex trafficking. So those original charges that I brought to the government are the ones they ended up being charged for.
Well, you bring up the notion of sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people, in terms of experiencing this through the headlines, thought it was a sex cult.
Well, I mean, you could call it a sex cult, right? I mean, if you hear about that women are recruiting other women to have sex with the leader, legitimately.
How long after your daughter was in, like, what was the time frame before she was branded and into DOS?
Okay, so all of this I had to find out sort of piecemeal.
And she's never telling you any of it.
No, she's telling now.
Now, I mean,
she's
prior.
No. She was probably branded in January of 2017, and I wasn't told about her involvement until April of 2017. And then once I was told what was going on, a primal maternal instinct kicked in that I didn't know I had that wouldn't stop. I wouldn't stop till.
And so is that initial inclination to call the police, to go there with a gun and get her out, or to do what?
Okay. So first I read everything I could about cults literally in 24 hours. I went to see a cult specialist and I structured an intervention. This was in May, I guess. Planned to bring India home for her birthday, which was at the end of May, had it all planned out. That failed. Then I went to the police.
It failed because she didn't come home? Or
she came home, but
she didn't want it.
I blew the intervention completely. And I'd been warned by the expert, Rachel Bernstein. She said, don't be disappointed if she gets back on the plane and goes back. Don't consider it a failure. You may have planted the seeds, but she may need to figure it out for herself. But I was like, oh, BS. Of course I can get through.
For those listening, why do you think you blew it? Like, what is it that you think you said or did that could have changed the outcome?
I said key words that had been implanted in her to put up defenses. I said, you're brainwashed and you're in a cult.
Oh, okay.
And you don't say that.
That's really good to know.
Yeah, you don't say that. But She wasn't ready. And this is the irony. Had she seen the light in that moment and she and I had walked away into the sunset and left it all behind, Keith Raniere would still be operating. He would still be branding women and he would still be recruiting them for sex. And this organization would be untouched. And so the irony is, the deeper she dug her heels in, the more people I had to help, the deeper I had to research, and the more crimes I uncovered.
Do we have any idea how many women were branded and part of the sex cult?
Well, according to Keith's lawyers, around 150.
Oh, my God.
Ugh. And
the age range, is it all across the board?
All across the board. I mean, his preference is the younger, the better.
And they restrict calories to about 500, and he wants women thin, and because it would hurt him if they're bigger.
It's disgusting.
It is so repulsive.
Yeah.
And then after you finally fought to have your daughter out, how does she even move on from this? What are those steps like? And as a mother, what are the things that you can even say now?
Well, let me backtrack a little bit, because there was a public kind of explosion. I was out there basically outing my daughter as the last resort, because I couldn't get her out, and she hated me.
And I had did they ever threaten you?
Oh, yeah. Yes, they did. So I received threats of law. But this is what they do, vexatious litigation from Mexico. Lawsuits threatening me of fraud, extortion. So this was whistleblower intimidation. And also, I was told if I went to Mexico, I'd get killed, because the leader of the cult in Mexico is the son of the ex-president. So these are very dangerous people. I think that's something to.
And as we speak right now, I know that Allison Mack was sentenced.
Yes.
This other gentleman, where is he?
Okay, so actually, they're all convicted, guilty, awaiting sentencing. And we just found out that Claire Bronfman's sentencing is January 8th. And one of the other ladies, who was one of the accountants, I think the end of January. So we're waiting for the rest of them to be sentenced. But everyone was pled guilty.
So now this does not exist at all any longer.
Well, this is what we don't know.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. I feel like there's probably some people there that are still his, you know, diehard.
Yeah. In my opinion, Claire Bronfman is still bankrolling NXIVM. And I mean, one of the things that I did want to mention my book, because when you talk about what can parents do, I wrote the book to expose this organization in the advent that the government did nothing, because they dropped the ball so many times in the past because they were scared of like the amount of money that was backing this group. And so the book is a really good kind of roadmap for people who are going through this, who want to know what to avoid, what the warning signs are. And actually, when India read it, it helped her wake up. She was like, if I had had all this information, I never would have fallen prey.
Did she need to go into any kind of treatment? Like what, how do you recover?
Okay, so it's very different than an addiction recovery. It's more understanding, it's an education about how this could have happened to you, understanding the grooming process, understanding indoctrination, or if you want to call it brainwashing. And I think that I'm not going to talk about her specifically because I don't want to trespass on her, but what I recommend to people who are coming out of a cult is that they go through a therapeutic process to unpack what was done to them and how. Because if you don't, you are vulnerable to stepping into another situation that is abusive.
And you almost miss what you've left, right?
Well, even though you may have left physically, you're still mentally hijacked because you're still under the influence of a doctrine. And the way you're thinking has been changed drastically to the point that you can't think critically. You become completely dependent on an outside source. That's very frightening.
There are probably some people, and this will sound harsh, and that's not my intention, who'll be like, well, it's just these showbiz, these Hollywood types, my family here in Des Moines would never fall prey to this. What would you say to that?
Well, first of all, we have to be very careful not to victim shame. And I think culturally we do that because we don't want to feel that we could be vulnerable to being conned. Luck of the draw that I wasn't, and my poor daughter was, and maybe her vulnerability was she was in transition in a relationship, in a business. But the truth is, a lot of the people who were recruited into this group were highly educated. They had Ivy League PhDs. These were not dummies. And very often cults go after very productive, intelligent people because they want those people working on their behalf and they want good recruiters. So the thing to note is that everyone can be vulnerable. Anyone can be susceptible at some period in their lives. And it's better to be forearmed than, and what is the expression, forearmed and forewarned?
Right.
Like, if you know, if you understand how these groups operate, it's very similar to a sexual predator or an abusive controlling relationship. It's the exact same playbook. So whether it's, so I wouldn't say that it's just Hollywood types who are, you know, willing to try weird
stuff,
kinky stuff. Money and
when you hear what it is, anyone would have been sucked into it. Anyone that's ever gone to hear Tony Robbins or Oprah, for that matter, could have been sucked into this. Because when you first hear about it, you're like, oh, they really like sell it to you. Like, oh, this will change my life or this will help my career. I also think it's important that because of your notoriety, you brought them down, because this wasn't getting into People magazine without you having, you know, the celebrity that you had. That was how I learned about it. And then I dug deeper because I'm like, what is this thing?
And your fight and your grit and, you know, knowing that it needed to stop.
I knew it was a really dangerous situation. And in fact, the first, this relates back to what you, my question you asked me. When I originally went to the police and the FBI, one of the other members of one of the defectors went to somebody in the local Albany area who was part of the FBI. And he said, you know, you should be very careful who you're even telling law enforcement about the situation, because these are very dangerous people. And I'm thinking, why are you not doing anything? Law enforcement did nothing for 20 years and people were bringing them evidence.
When you're in Dosser, you're going through any of this, do you think you know in the back of your mind that this is wrong? Or do you think you are so brainwashed to this point that you can't imagine living without it? Like, what do you think that is? Like, it doesn't have to be your daughter directly, but what do you think somebody would think they were gaining at that point when they're being branded, when they're being forced to have sex with somebody that's their leader?
Imagine it's a slow drip. These are not women who are being recruited off the street. Hey, come join a sex cult and get branded. They've been taught over years to trust these people. So when these people, their superiors say, "Do join this new group, it'll make you a better person, it'll empower you." These are people that they've developed relationships with that they wouldn't believe would ask them to do anything that was wrong. And the thing about indoctrination is that the line bending, you know, it's like your moral compass gets removed. It's the same as any sex trafficking victims. By the end, you truly believe that you are doing what you're doing because it's building character. Now, when you look back, people are horrified. They're like, how could I have been that person? But it actually you create a whole new persona. That's very frightening to think how fragile the human psyche is, that we can actually be turned into somebody else, whether it's terrorist training or any type of indoctrination. It's very scary.
It's as simple as being in a bad relationship with a jerk. You stay and stay and stay. And it's like, I always hear, oh, if that happened to me, I'd leave right away. And it's like, no, you wouldn't.
You don't.
And that's the most relatable part is you stay and you think, if I just do this, this will get better. If I say this, if I act better, this will get better. And they're just sucking these people in. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's where I thought was so fascinating about it, is that anyone could be sucked into this. And that's what's so terrifying. Although he was so gross and creepy that I thought.
But the original payment, I know, right? The original payment to even do the first set of seminars was how much money?
I'm trying to remember, but
it was like $5,000.
I thought it was like $2,500 to $5,000. Yeah, so you have expensive. To have a certain
That's a real barrier to entry, I think,
for
a lot of people.
Sure. A lot of people don't have that. So he's asking for a certain level of clientele or whatever people to bring in.
Well, he's also saying that it's worth putting this on credit cards.
You're an
cards.
Elite.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You need this. When I first heard, and Catherine can explain it again, how they sold it, even me, I was like, this would have been something I kind of thought, oh, I'm going to take this class. Like, and then you just go.
I'm not at all suggesting that there's a direct analogy, but we're all here in Southern California. And if you go to certain areas and you see people on the street in the Scientology uniforms or whatever, do you have a different thought now than you would have had you not had this insight and things?
Well, I was never a fan of Scientology, because that to me was when I learned about you know, the sort of the mystical or spiritual aspect or the alien thing. I was like, okay, how could anybody fall for that stuff? Because it was religious. This was secular, so it was easier for me to fall for. But I am not a fan of self-help. If I was cynical, I am like super cynical.
You mean to have self-help when it comes to these MLM type?
Any type of self-help that's not an accredited therapist, any of these large group trainings, I'm like, stay away. Keep your money. If you need fellowship, go to a 12-step program for free. If you're not an addict, have a great life. You're great. You're fine. Just forget about it. Because the danger, I mean, self-help in this country alone is an $11 billion a year business, and it is completely unregulated.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm not a fan.
Well, we've learned a lot.
I know. We're all like, wow.
It's just the beginning.
Yeah.
It's really...
I know. There's so much more.
So what's in the true Hollywood story?
Well, actually, when they interviewed me, it was like 3 days after my house burned down in Malibu. And I don't remember what I said.
But it was probably pretty raw then.
It was very raw. But it was based, again, on my book, Captive. And so they asked me a lot of questions about information that's in the book. And we'll soon see, and a breakdown of the steps that I took to help bring this cult down, which was not a fight that I would have chosen willingly. Yeah.
And in here as well, is there steps on the signs if you are entering a cult as well?
Yes, definitely.
So that you know if you're there or you've heard of one or you're thinking about it, you know, or if you have a child in one?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much it's heartbreaking, but I think it's really good for people to hear because so many people stumble into these things and have no idea what they're getting themselves or their family into until it's too late. And you were able to turn things around and phew.
Well, thank you. This is one of the rare times when the victims were protected. So I feel very blessed.
So you have four kids. How old are they?
It's a good age range. I call them the olders and the youngers. So 24, 18, 13, and 12.
And what's your thoughts on spanking?
I have never raised a hand. Not once.
I haven't either, but I have a question.
Okay.
Because all of this has been going on after Sunday's episode of Keeping Up the Kardashians.
Right.
Because of this like stressy, messy like situation between one of Kourtney's children scratching somebody and then Corey saying I'd be whipping her ass.
Okay.
And then obviously the parents are upset by that.
Yes.
I started trying to figure out all of the information in regards to spanking. I mean, I've been spanked.
Okay.
Not the way I said that sounded a little creepy, but I used to when I was younger, I remember two spankings.
Sure.
They were like big deals. And then other than that, I would get like kind of the arm squeeze.
Right.
But that's kind of where it stopped. But because of that one spanking, I still like one of the spankings. I have never been late to this day because of fear.
Okay.
Because of that spanking that I got for being late.
All right. I'll tell you my childhood spanking story. I used to, you know what a Super Bowl is, the super bouncy balls?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I used to enjoy bouncing the Super Bowl in the shower and then timing how long it would bounce.
Sounds like a good game.
And it was fun. And my father was like, you're going to break the shower door. And my father is very like gentle, not violent person, but he always said, when you break the shower door, I will kill you. And so, you know, months later, I broke the shower door and my mother was like, wait till your father gets home. You know, he's going to kill you. And so I was the fear
the
alone.
Anticipation the anticipation of the spank,
so
a potential spanking.
So I put on like 12 pairs of underwear because I deserved it because I had been warned and everything else. And then, you know, he kind of yelled at me, but nothing really happened. He yelled at me and you're going to pay for this and blah, blah, blah. And then nothing really happened. And then at night, tucking me in, he said, oh, and you know, your mom told me you put on 12 pairs of underwear. Are they still on? And I was like, no. And he goes, now.
No.
And then nothing happened. But that was as effective.
You just got an almost spanking? Yeah. See, I got a real spanking. Right. And I was told that my birthday party was going to be canceled.
Okay.
Which to me, when you're however old you're, I think I was like 10 years old.
Sure.
I was like, this is pure devastation. But yeah, that I respected that spanking for the rest of my life.
Right.
That being said, I do not spank my kids.
Right.
And if somebody who was not, well, I mean, even if it was my husband, my husband had been spanked when he was younger,
sure,
as well. But if he tried to do it, that'd be a whole nother issue. But somebody that's not even family,
right,
is saying that they would spank my children, the level of crazy you would see me go, there are no words.
But you know what's funny? I'm obviously a touch older than you guys. When I was in sixth grade, in our sixth grade classroom hung a paddle, and the paddle was named.
Oh, at your
one
school,
side,
yeah,
of the paddle was called Whizzer and the other side was called Flasher. I don't think they ever took it down, but it was there.
I mean, I think that now we're in the day where we're constantly being told different ways to discipline,
sure,
your kids.
Right.
I mean, even now they're saying a time out isn't right because they shouldn't be alone by themselves because that's where, you know. So there's.
What's your age range?
Our age range is 5, 7, and 11.
All right. Does anybody have a phone?
Nobody has a.
Good.
Well, my stepdaughter has a phone, but it's just so when she's with us, she can,
right,
call her mom,
right,
and vice versa.
Right. Okay.
But no, there's no games.
Right.
There's no.
But I think that the spanking of today with kids of a certain age is to take the phone.
Take the phone away.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, my son has a little bit of, like, he gets nervous about certain things.
Right.
So we talk to somebody and they're like, definitely don't give him a timeout.
Yeah.
Because he already takes himself out and then that's more alone time.
Right.
And it's like.
So is there no parenting going on with the parents? Because is that why we have millennials that don't do anything?
Well, that's a whole nother thing. I mean, watching, I say all of these things, you know, I want to make sure that I raise my kids the same way I was raised, but I'm not, because I'm not doing a lot
right.
of, one, I'm a helicopter parent because I have to be in Los Angeles.
See, I don't think that's necessarily true. I grew up here. My kids obviously have grown up here, and like this whole idea, you know, oh my gosh, if you're not keeping an eye on them, somebody's going to pluck your kid out of your front yard and kidnap them. As a practical matter, that does not happen. It just doesn't.
No, but I used to be able to ride my bike to school to my friend's house.
Right.
In Los Angeles, that isn't their closest friend is 35 minutes in the car.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? There's not, we don't live in a little neighborhood where the kids can ride their bikes to school.
What do you guys think of this story? So I was taking care of my nieces the other day. I'm in the living room of my house with a front patio that has a gate, right? And one of my nieces is inside. My mom is also there. So there's two adults, two kids. One of my nieces is playing inside. My other niece is playing in the front patio with a gate. The UPS man walked in with a package. Obviously, my little niece got a little startled by the UPS man. And the UPS man yelled at me, raised his voice, "You need to watch your daughter better. How dare you leave her out here? She could be grabbed."
See,
and I'm like, attached to my house.
But it's that level of paranoia.
It's that level of paranoia, but also it's that level of people thinking they need to tell other people what to do all of the time. Like, why does this random stranger really think he needs to tell me how to parent?
Right.
Or why does, I mean, it's no matter what we're doing, it's driving in the car. It's, you know, you'd be a better parent if you did this. You'd be a better parent if you did that. Are you even a parent?
Right.
You know, half the time the people judging or, you know, like when they were parents, they didn't do that great of a job anyway. But I just feel like the level of judgment is so extreme when it comes to being a parent. But I do agree with the fact that if somebody said to me, like, "I'm going to whip your kid's ass,"
right,
I'd be like,
"Really?
We're going to take a timeout now from each other
and have a conversation."
Like,
I'll tell you a parenting story. So my daughter number two, whose name is Rory, who Amy knows, has every good quality, but has always been loud. She's got a loud voice, and she had as a child, a piercing scream. And one of these screams where everybody would turn, like, "Why are you beating your child? She's screaming so much." And so she and I were, she's like two maybe, or two or three. The two of us are flying back from Hawaii to LA. And it's one of those rare, we've been upgraded. And I'm like, you know what? I cannot have a screaming child in first class. We'll just, so we're in the very back row. and she is sleeping the entire time. And then I think that flight's about 5 hours. So about after four hours, she wakes up and just starts to scream. And she screams for base, and the flight attendant, can we help you? And I take, anyway, she screams for 45 minutes straight. So the next day on the morning news, kind of just as a joke, I'm like, oh, you know, if you were on United Flight 7 yesterday from Maui, my apologies. That was me and my daughter. And somebody wrote me this note. You know, I'm so glad you said something. I was at LAX last night, and I was picking up my sister, who had just spent 2 weeks in Maui. And when she walked off the plane, her hair was standing on end. what do you do?
I kind of give really, you know, I most of the time will fly in coach with my family because, well, I don't like spending a ton of money.
No, that's money not well spent.
To me, I think it's a waste of money.
Right.
But if my kid, their legs barely go over the seat. So if they accidentally touch the seat in front of you and you get like the death glare, like, are you watching? Listen, I'm watching them. But like, take a little breath or, you know, save up and start flying private because this is the real world here. And occasionally people are going to touch your seat. And I'm doing the best I can. And you adding that extra pressure and giving me dirty looks, like.
And you know, that there may be a touch of generation to that, because I remember, you know, my parents saying to me, we didn't fly till we were 20. Like, you know, to be on a plane when you're a kid is amazing.
Right.
But now it's taken for granted.
Now it's taken for granted. And also people love to say other people are doing things wrong. It makes them feel so good. I can sit here and be miserable on this flight because this person's making me feel that way, as opposed to taking a deep breath and saying, you know what, it's this, this, and this that I've done today that's actually making me feel like crap.
Or it's the fact that your knees are touching the seat in front of you.
Or it's just my kids are driving you freaking nuts and I'm sorry.
Are they well-behaved generally or not?
Yes, I give them about an 8.
Okay. All right. 8's good. 8's good enough.
Okay, we're going to go on a quick break and then take a breath and then bring on a specialist to help us even more.
Good.
Ginger?
Yes.
Hi, it's Teddy and Sam here. How are you?
Hi, Teddy. How are you? Hi, Sam.
Hi, Ginger.
We're both parents, so we have a lot of questions. Like, for one,
okay,
how are we even supposed to parent anymore? There's so many rules.
I know. Yes.
So, example, we've been talking about how, you know, there's been a lot of things in the news about, you know, spanking and time out and even everybody getting first place and, you know, we're all getting trophies. Like, there's so many discussions and so many rights and wrongs now. I know that, like, yes, of course you trust your instinct, but like, is there any kind of tips that you can give us to kind of, you know, give us a clear line?
Yeah. So, well, one, there's so many things happening and acceptable ways of discipline. I call it like there's this public parent, right? So what society feels that we should be parenting in the way that we should parent. And then there's this way that, you know, context of how we want to raise our children. And so sometimes I feel like there's this dichotomy about what others' opinions kind of influence the way we ultimately want to parent our kids. But I would say as far as like discipline and how we discipline our kids, I think it's very personal and based on your context, because we can use discipline as, you know, correct behavior, or we can use it as a way to like inform how they'll be disciplined in the future. And so I think we can just like, I think the way we look at discipline should shift a little bit, because, you know, kids are sponges. They're you know, absorbing everything, and they're learning ways to like communicate, deal with conflict, all of that stuff. So there's a lot happening, but I think we just have to define what it is that we ultimately want to see in our children.
Now, Ginger, it would seem to me that in 2019, the notion of, you know, smacking your kid is probably verboten, is probably a bad idea. But at the same time, I suspect there are parents who would say, you know what, if I got really out of line, my mother gave me a whack and I turned out fine. So if it was okay for me, it's okay for my kids.
Yes. So there's that. Yeah. I get a lot of parents who say the old school way of discipline, right? So that, you know, my father or my mother was heavy with the hand, and or rules was the iron fist. And so I think times have changed in terms of, no, it didn't necessarily break you as an individual, but it didn't pour into you. So I'm all like, let's not look at the deficits as far as like spanking, but what can we pour into our children that we'll probably get better results and yield better relationships in life in the future. So I kind of like try to switch it and not like focus on like, yeah, you could slap your kid, but you could also show them or be what we want to see in our children, which is showing them the way to interact with adults, showing how to deal with conflict. So,
well, I mean,
that's kind of how I've been talking to my parents. Yes.
Because, well, one, I did some research and it's actually illegal to spank your kids if you leave a mark. So
this is true,
but I feel like a lot of people don't even know that. And so I'm wondering how parents, when yes, doing what's best for their kids, but like, how are they supposed to know what's actually legal even and what's okay? Because if they were brought up a certain way, I, for one, don't spank and don't believe in that, but I did get spanked when I was younger a couple of times. Mm-hmm. I just choose to not mm-hmm. continue it on, but I don't know for those of the, you know, how would you explain these are some clear ways to actually discipline your child?
Sure. So it's hard that, I mean, so there's this, I've used to work with children that kind of were abused and neglected. And so I've seen the gamut of what, you know, physical discipline has done, not only physically, but emotionally. And so the ways that for me as a mental health professional, we talk about, you know, discipline and what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. A lot of the schools and teachers usually talk to kids and parents about like them being mandated reporters. And so if, you know, if they hear a suspect of any abuse. And so there's that part as far as physical abuse. What I say is that children do require discipline, but I also look at it as a way, an opportunity to teach them what they should be doing, and that we have to deal with the content. So if they are being unsafe, or some of the what they're doing is not going to be make them a productive you know, citizen in the society, I think we have to address it.
So I have two,
but I think it's case by case. Yes,
I have two practical examples. So let's say you have a 5-year-old that darts out into the street, and you have to grab your kid. How do you then right. teach them not to do that? That's my first question.
Right. So one, you got to catch them because it's unsafe. But then the practical part is I have to teach them what I want to see from them. So that is a demonstration of I'm going to walk them through the street, look left, look right, have them understand the consequences. So it's almost like we're being an example of what we want to see, as opposed to just saying what we don't want to see. We have to show them what we want to see in them.
Okay, so then let's fast forward to 16-year-old who is right. lying or talking back or drinking or doing things you don't want your 16-year-old doing. How do you parent that child?
So you have to immediately address the negative behavior and definitely make a consequence. Because would I say that it has to be depend on the child, because taking a cell phone away from one child may just, they may get it. And taking a cell phone away from another child, they may not, it may not be something that's going to improve their behavior. So you kind of have to know what motivates your child. And I say sometimes you have to take away some of those privileges that they're used to until they kind of change their behavior and ultimately and show them what you want to see. And getting to the bottom of why they are doing what they're doing, because there's more to the action. There's something behind it.
And how do you feel about, like, the reward chart? I've noticed my son showing great improvement since we stopped doing, like, timeouts and more. If you do right. these things, then you get a heart. And then after this many hearts, you get this.
I think it's I love, actually, the reward chart, because it's essentially you are investing in what you want to see for them. And then it's kind of natural rewards, like a heart. A high five. And I'm sure maybe it progresses to other things, but it's natural rewards. And so they are more focused on what you want to see or what will be more positive than the negative consequences of behavior.
I've also seen a lot of, and my parents didn't even bother with me. I was so bad at school, but I've seen a lot of parents disciplining their children because of grades. So I'm curious, what is the alternative to, my kids aren't really at that age yet, but to those parents that are putting so much pressure on their kids that their kids end up just giving up?
Yes. So, well, one, we got to see where our kids are. I see a lot of kids who have a lot of test anxiety, a lot of school anxiety, because there is so much pressure, either from their parents, society about getting into college, et cetera. And so the parent then feels like the punishment is going to get a better result of behavior, when actually they need to start asking more questions. So it could be a matter of discipline. So it could be a matter of, okay, homework time, tutors. There's things that we can, again, pour into our children that are
like
positive
having
aspects,
a schedule for them, a routine.
Yes, definitely.
And I feel like anxiety is something that wasn't really talked about when I was growing up. And now we hear it so often in kids. And now, you know, same with ADD or ADHD. Like, these are things that are way more, people are way more open to discuss now. And kids are talking about it. And so I was just kind of curious what the best, if you're feeling like your kid is struggling with one of these things and you don't have the means or you don't know what to do, like, what do you recommend in that case?
So you're right. I think it's more socially acceptable to talk about anxiety, and we are beginning to see it through a lot of avenues of the impact of anxiety. I mean, kids aren't going to school. They you know, there's physical manifestations. So their stomach ache. They may say, "I don't want to go to school because of X, Y, and Z." But what can we do as a parent to support the children? I'm a firm believer in just having a conversation with your child about what is impacting them. So, and looking at the physical symptoms. So that means maybe you have to modify your expectations of them so it reduces their stress level. Acceptance is huge. So accepting that you do your best. I want you to do your best, and whatever your best is, that's what I accept. Not necessarily what I think your best should be, but what the child's best is in that moment. So,
because it can be hard as well, because your kids are so smart that sometimes they know how to manipulate you as well.
That's true.
So sometimes they may be having anxiety, but sometimes they're smart little buggers. You know, like my son will be like, "Mommy, I just really need to sleep in bed with you tonight. I'm not feeling that good." And I'll be like, "Buddy, do you really not feel good, or do you just want to sleep with me?" And he's like, "I just want to sleep with you, but can I?"
Yeah. So, and of course, you ultimately know that that's a one over, right? So I say, look at like consistency and inconsistency of behavior. So for a child who's typically doing well in school, typically gets good grades, or typically is, you know, performing in a performance well, and then they have those isolated or moments where they dip. I mean, that would say, okay, something's not right, or something's not wrong, or something's wrong with my child. I need to look more into that. Or if the opposite, if they're constantly struggling with a subject matter, or they're constantly have fear of being on stage, there may be something more to it, again, that we have to look into. So it's not just the materials, but there's some more things or questions that we need to ask.
Okay. Thank you so much for all your help today. We really appreciate it.
Welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks. And, you know, maybe we'll talk again.
Yes.
You know,
I hope so. You guys have a great day.
Oh, thanks, Ginger. Thanks so much. You know, what I think now is everything is so much more like concentrated, you know, than it used to be. So this idea that kids are anxious about things, there's so much more surrounding them, I think, kind of to make them anxious.
Yeah.
So that's it. And then the other thing, and I will speak from experience here, the whole college thing is everybody gets in somewhere. It's all going to be fine. You just have to completely relax and let go of it. Because I know kids and parents, you know, for the parents, it's projection. Mm-hmm. They want Debbie to get in to Stanford because they want to get into Stanford.
Because they didn't themselves.
Because they didn't themselves.
So are all parents just basically screwing up their kids? I mean, even listening to the parenting expert, I'm like,
is she actually telling us what to do? Like, it's all just a crapshoot. Am I right?
Well, don't you? I think the thing that's most unusual, and you see this on occasion, where you will meet super nice parents, and for whatever cosmic reason, the kids are crappy.
Yeah. So kids are because you don't see everything. You don't see the full round of things. Right. And I think kids are smart. They know what's going on. So I know the biggest thing for me that's helped with my kids is if I tell them if I'm stressed or if I'm in, like, I've got a ton of work to do, instead of just not being present. Like, I'm like, hey guys, I need 1 hour. I really need to, like, hunker down this hour so that then I can focus on you guys. And then I set their expectations and then everything's better. Whereas I pretend to be super mom all of the time. And I'm like, I'm good. We're good. Oh, ha, ha, that's so funny. Meanwhile, I'm looking at my phone.
Right.
Then all of a sudden they start acting out because they don't know what's happening and they want attention. And we do that as adults too. Like, even your wife or my husband comes home from work or vice versa. You know, you take things personally unless the person communicates with you what they need.
But you see, I think it's a good idea. But even the phrase, as a parent to help my kid set their expectations, that to me is like a phrase like my mom and dad would never, like, what, you know.
I know. It's a very total. But I know what I like. Right. I think I parent the way that I personally like to live my life.
Yeah. I mean, and then this whole nature versus nurture. I have 3 daughters and a son, and everybody said with my daughters constantly, like, just you wait. And wait for what? They've really all turned out incredible. They're nice girls, and there's not too much of that eye rolling and all the things that, you know, that you would expect. But I heard that from, and you know, this whole idea, well, girls are harder than boys. Like, I find my son, who I'm enjoying more and more as he gets a touch older, was much more of a challenge than any girls were easy
to me.
Yeah, because
boys have so much more energy. They're just like, wild.
Well, my son is like such a lover and a cuddler and all those things. But like my daughter, when I walk her into school, she's like, can you walk behind me, please?
Right. Yeah.
She's like, do you mind not kissing me at school anymore? I'm like, oh, we're there. You're in the first grade. Do you mind that shirt that you just asked me to buy for you not wearing it?
Right.
Like, and wearing something else? Hello. But you try not to take it personally, but then you remember when you were a kid.
And then one thing which may be very LA-centric. Do you find this at pickup? I'm like, you know what? I've never seen that Rolls Royce before. It's like, it's ridiculous.
Oh, it's keeping up with the Joneses,
it's the dumbest
thing
ever.
I can't do it.
No,
and
I
when
won't.
The mom starts telling me how great of a mom she is all the time and all the things she juggles and blah, 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 I'm like,
please.
Honestly, I don't have the time for this friendship.
I just find every 40-year-old is just totally messed up from the damage that's been done to them. It's like everybody's just a big pile of mess.
And nobody is perfect. And it's the people, and you know, I struggle with it as well. I wish I was perfect, but I make multitude of mistakes every day. But I think it's important that your kids see that you can make mistakes.
Right.
That life still goes on.
Sure, absolutely.
And that if you work hard, good things come. I mean, that's the end of the day. That's what you, and that they're loved.
Right, exactly. That's the most important.
Yeah.
If they know that, then that trumps everything else.
Yeah. If your kids feel love and they have the basic skills of survival.
Right.
They're going to be fine.
See, I think I don't want to retitle this podcast because it has a great name already, but it's like, relax. We're all going to be fine.
Yeah.
That should be it. That could be it. Because people just panic.
Oh, people panic. And then they start asking everybody and their mother what to do.
Right.
And you're going to get everybody else's advice
which is a whole mess.
Make sure you guys are emailing us at Teddy, TEDDITTEA at iHeartRadio.com. And then we will address it on next week's episode because I know you guys are going to want to dig even deeper. Lisa's digging this week and hers is, my issue for open marriage / swingers is, what if your significant other brings home a disease?
Yikes. I tell you what, I've always had this idea of, if you ever go watch stand-up comedy, I think sometimes you think, oh, I can do it. So here's just the beginning of a stand-up bit, which I think would be very effective.
Okay.
You know, everybody's so into all this, you know, open marriage stuff and swing. You know, the problem with threesomes, there's just too much talking. Isn't that a great first line?
I mean, that's
great. I have nothing after that.
I'm not sure what that has to do with STDs.
Right.
But
so the feedback I got is we forgot to ask the swinging couple, how do they avoid disease? And how do these open marriage people avoid getting
And did you speak with them on the phone or did you meet them?
I mean, I don't know that I necessarily need to ask the therapist this. Condoms.
Yes. I mean, are they using them though? We don't know.
I don't know, but they should be.
I would assume
that that is a rule. By the way, I did learn that there's a kind of a condom that people are using that doesn't actually protect you from disease. It only protects you from being pregnant.
Oh yeah, that's true. I think.
Like maybe it's moleskin versus. I mean, hello.
I think they actually say that on some of the labels. Mm-hmm. Not that
do,
I've read any labels.
Do people read their condom labels?
I have a latex allergy, so I'm not one to speak.
Oh, jeez. How do you know you have a latex allergy?
Because I had a latex bandage on my body once, and it was like fire. It was like my whole body was on fire, and someone was punching me from the inside. And then it took days for it to go back to normal.
I get it's that like from latex from the glue when I have fake eyelashes on.
We've learned a lot.
Yeah. Thank you, Sam, for joining me today. I love getting your thoughts and feedback and helping me dig deep on all of these topics.
Well, I tell you what, Teddy, I feel we've been through it.
we've been through a lot of things today.
Yeah. Happy to be here. Thanks.
Appreciate it.